Hello and welcome to the Context Machine episode 590, A Palindrome. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. And actually, Brian, you say palindrome, but I think it's much more significant than that because I'm looking at this.
Yes.
And if you add the digits together, 5, 9, and 0, you get 14.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
If you add those digits together, you get 5.
Yeah.
Oh. Which is a prime number.
Oh.
And 5 is the same forward and backwards.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. This all checks out completely and is exactly how real mathematicians think and speak.
It's yes, because we are real mathematician nations.
We are.
Please make sure to check us out at our new home, contextmachine.io.
You can also use, assuming you want to at this point, contextmachine.io to reach out to us. Go to Twitter at contextmachine. There's a theme there.
Yeah, it's a great way to hone your math skills through our superior knowledge.
Well, except for the fact that we don't put episode numbers on the posts.
That's how we keep the mystery in the relationship.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's a little thing.
You got the next line.
Oh, Brian, look at that. There's still more to the intro script.
I mean, most of what we said is not in the intro script, but go ahead.
Right. But don't worry. You'll be able to edit, so I'll make it sound like it all flowed together with the edits. Oh, also, today's episode is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs.
Dead air. And I will tell you more about them later in the show. We do appreciate them sponsoring us, of course. Right?
I do. I do.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. I do. I was just thinking it's amazing that we managed to actually get through the introduction.
Yeah. I think it's amazing that I actually wound up at my desk to record this.
You know, we both deserve participation trophies.
We do. All right. So today's episode is going to be about, I'm just in case things go awry, I'm only going to mention the first one because we might not get to the second one.
Okay. Smart.
It's happened. It's happened before, but we have just some security notes for you.
Right. Okay. So first up, Apple rolled out updates for iOS 15 and iPadOS 15, so that the updates are 15.6.1. And they're important updates because they address zero-day flaws, meaning, and specifically in this case, zero-day flaws, exploits, that are being currently exploited in the wild. And one allows an attacker through to use maliciously crafted code to gain kernel level control the system. Yeah. Now, exactly what the attack vector is for that, I'm not quite certain because I didn't read all the details. But the other one, it's a WebKit flaw. And so if you have maliciously crafted code, say on a website, and you go and view it in any web browser on iPhone or iPad because they all require WebKit, then you can use this vulnerability in WebKit to run arbitrary code on the device. So basically it means that there are websites out there and potentially some nasty apps out there that have the ability to allow someone to essentially take control of your iPhone or iPad.
Yeah, or so like that's a compromised bad website. What, you know, website that got compromised and had either redirected to a maliciously crafted site or became a maliciously crafted site.
Right. Because websites get hacked all the time.
All the time.
Brian, now that we're into this one, I do have one thing to add, which is that I have seen so many news stories over the past week that are talking about this like it is the most horrible security breach we have ever seen on any device. Now, granted, something that gives kernel level control, something that can use maliciously crafted websites to inject code on your device. Yeah, these things are bad. This is not a first, and it won't be a last. This is not the end of Apple's reign as the best smartphone or tablet maker, whatever. It's a pain in the butt. Just install the updates and move on. And we have had other security updates in the past that address similar types of issues. You installed those security updates and moved on. Same thing.
Yeah. And I mean, yes. That said, do install these. And as we like to often remind everybody, if you're listening to the show, there's a really good chance that there's someone who looks to you for either, you know, help, advice, guidance, or even maybe sometimes direct support. So make sure that the people that you care about are also going to get this update installed.
Yeah, there you go.
It's an important one. All right. Well, that is good. Funny enough, so I've got three iOS devices. Well, I've got two iPads and an iPhone. And I had updated my iPhone. I updated my main iPad, but I had this iPad mini here and I hadn't updated it, but because keep in mind, I knew about these updates, but I didn't like actually go read what they were about because I hadn't done the show yet.
Eventually we'd record the show
and you would tell me,
and I would just tell you.
And as you were explaining it to me, I was like, oh my, I was busily like starting that update for my iPad mini.
That's funny.
So thanks.
The voice I hear in your head was something like, holy crap, I got to make this happen now.
Exactly. That's maybe a little too sophisticated for me, your impression there. But regardless, get this update installed. Make sure that the people that you care about are getting their updates installed too. And as Jeff said, don't, you know, ignore the FUD. Everybody likes to make, you know, Apple related stories very attention grabbing.
Well, and we are in the middle of the summer where the Apple and tech in general news cycle is a little bit slower. So you take something that maybe this fall wouldn't be as big a story, and you kind of blow it up right now.
Yeah, sure. That's fair. All right. The next thing is, since we've been talking about since I've been talking about NFTs, we've attracted some NFT interest from both new listeners and existing listeners, and that's great, and I love it. However, be careful out there. There are a lot of scams and a lot of malicious actors out there who are doing everything they can to basically compromise your wallet and to be able to take the things that you have in your wallet out of your wallet and put it in theirs, or more than likely put them in the series of wallets so that it's harder to trace. Regardless, don't click on links, especially like if you're in a Discord community and you get any kind of direct message from someone you don't know and there's a link, don't click on it. Right? I cannot tell you how many scammers have sent me fake links, like links that are messages that look like they're the founder of the project, or look like they're one of the projects that I'm in, or just from people like, hey, there's a free mint, you should go check this out. They're scams. Like, no one's reaching out to you with anything legitimate. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. And I've really tried to craft my scams towards you, you know, with the highest quality, and yet I've only been able to score two of your NFTs that way.
It's because I'm super careful.
Yeah. See, that's great. You're making me work for it. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. So, and to that end, it's not just Discord, but Discord has become a central hub for NFT projects. So if you have an NFT project, you need a Discord, and that's where the, you know, project owners are disseminating information, trying to build their community, trying to build the hype for their project and things like that. And so what'll happen is the bad guys will join a server, a Discord server for a project, look at the membership list, and then just start, you know, using bots will send the members of that server a message that looks like it's from that project, a direct message. So a very important security concept is if you're going to join any Discord server, turn off direct messages from members of the server. Someone can still send you a friend request. If you accept that friend request, you can then exchange direct messages with them, private messages. But if they're not your friend, they cannot send you direct messages.
Okay. I think that's excellent advice.
Right. And to do that, if you are on, this works in the app and it works if you're in a browser. If you right click on a Discord server, actually, Jeff, you can follow along at home.
I'm going to follow along at home, at least on the other side of the sound booth.
Right. So looking at our little context machine server that we've put together for recording this.
Yes.
If you right click on the server in the server list that's on the left, you'll see privacy settings.
Oh, look at this.
So it brings up a little window.
Privacy settings.
This says allow direct messages from server members. You want to turn that off.
Okay.
Say done. And now you have to be my friend. You and I have to be friends to exchange direct messages now.
Okay. Done. So I did it.
Right. I mean, I'm not your friend. And I don't want to exchange direct messages with you. Oh, no, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I didn't say that right. Usually if we're going to direct message, we'll do it through iMessage.
Yes.
But
did my crying sound believable?
Let's go with yes.
Okay. Let's go with yes. Thank you.
Let's go with yes. So, this is true if you're on a Discord server for a game, for any kind of community, but especially if you're doing something in the crypto or NFT space, just turn off those direct messages because, really you don't want to get spammy messages anyway. And I've seen them, but
I think that's great advice.
Like on the high end of the spectrum, it'll just be spam. But on the low end, it's a scam. And we don't, you know, we don't want those things. And the other thing that people will do is they will, like, this one's a really scary one. Some free mints. So this would be like a new NFT project. And when NFTs are first created, that's called minting. And the mint may have been the contract, the smart contract for the mint may have been maliciously crafted in such a way that when you go to sign the transaction, which is something that you do whenever, like every single crypto or NFT transaction has to be signed in some way. And if you go to sign it, you actually may be signing permissions for the other person to look through your wallet and take whatever they want. Right?
Ooh.
That's what a lot of these direct messages will be trying to steer you to is scams like that. So, you know, be real careful. Don't click on links that you don't know. Understand what you're doing. And if you don't understand it, just slow down and don't do it. Don't get too excited. I think
that's great advice.
One of the things that the NFT world likes to prey on is FOMO. So they'll send you something that looks really exciting and you want to jump on it immediately. And maybe you have all the information that you need to avoid it, but you get gripped by FOMO and you do it anyway. Because you're not taking the time. You're not doing the things that you know that you should do.
Man, there's some crappy people out there.
There really, really, really are some crappy. There's crappy people everywhere. But the thing is that the NFT world is essentially unregulated, and the NFT world has a lot of participants who, like, you know, A, they want a 10x, meaning that they just essentially want to be able to just quickly make a lot of money. And don't necessarily know what they're doing. They don't necessarily understand the security best practices, even what's happening, right? And a whole lot of people think that there's someone checking all these things, and there's not. Right? There's no watchdog agencies, right? Coinbase is probably one of the most professional, certainly one of the highest dollar crypto firms out there. It's an exchange. It's an exchange I like, and it's an exchange that I've used many times. And I don't have any complaints about Coinbase. One of the things I love about Coinbase, for instance, is that you can earn a couple of dollars in cryptocurrency by learning about a cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. Right. So new projects will basically advertise by doing this education campaign. And if you go through the campaign and take these quizzes, you get a couple of bucks in that cryptocurrency as a reward. That's fun. I get to learn and I make a dollar from it. That's awesome, right?
Yeah, that sounds great.
So Coinbase also has a brand new NFT market. And the project that we've talked about that I'm really excited about, Apes. There are a lot of, it's attracted a lot of interest from malicious actors. And I found a whole collection of stolen apes on the Coinbase's NFT project. And, Coinbase hadn't pulled them down. Right? Don't assume that anyone is looking out for your best interests other than you when you're in the crypto space and when you're in the NFT space. Know what you're doing. And if you don't know what you're doing, slow down and wait until you do.
So the way I see it, there's only two people that have your best interests in mind in the NFT and crypto space. And the first person is you, yourself, and the second person is Brian.
Yeah, I you shouldn't trust me, but you can. You shouldn't.
Use Brian like a springboard.
Yeah, for sure. There we go. Do that. So anyway, that's what's going on in the NFT space. I also apparently became a mod in the Bored Ape Galactic Club, which is a new AI art derivative of the original Bored Ape art that has just a really, really it's the only other Bored Ape derivative the AI derivative that I've found interesting besides apes. And I guess we'll put a link in the show notes to their Twitter site where you can get a link to their Discord if you so choose to join. I'm Slipbit in the NFT world. I don't know where that came. Actually, I do know where that came from. But anyway, that's apparently my ID in the NFT space.
Yeah, every time I read your ID or hear you say it, I hear it as a song from The Who.
Slipbit?
Yep. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, what song is that? Why? I know that song. I'm a massive Who fan, and I'm drawing a complete blank.
Isn't that funny? Because now that you say that, the actual song is... I can hear it in my head, but I can't hear the lyrics to tell you the name of the song.
Wow. I really want to delete this from the podcast so that no one knows that I'm apparently a Who noob.
Well... Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that we do so much post work on the show to give it that refined NPR feel.
That's great. All right, we had one third security note. I get Jeff, can we put a link to both the Bored Ape Galactic Club and then the Apes Project too?
Of course we can.
Twitter feeds in the show notes. I love both these projects.
Of course we can.
I love the art.
I mean, we're the boss of us.
And I'm not getting paid by either of them. So like I mod as a volunteer and I participate in Apes as a ape holder.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking you're going to say as a customer, but ape holder, that's a much more vivid image.
All right, so you have some VPN news for us.
I do. So first, for those of you that don't know what a VPN is, it's a way for you to create a virtual private network where your device, your iPhone, your Mac, your iPad, whatever it is, creates this sort of like secure safety tunnel that all of your data goes through. So if you're, say, in a coffee shop and you don't want anyone else in the coffee shop trying to eavesdrop and steal the data that's coming into and going out of your device over the network, you use a VPN. Great. So great way to protect your data when you're on public networks. And there's other uses too, but we'll stick with that for right now. So here's the problem. Apparently, with the way iOS and iPadOS are coded, there has been a longstanding problem where when you enable a VPN on the device, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of the data connections that you have going out to, you know, like say like a web server for your bank or whatever, there's no guarantee that those connections are being reset so that they're now inside that secure tunnel that you've created. So you would have in that case a false sense of security because you think that all of your data is now being encrypted and protected as it's traveling on its path to wherever it needs to go, when in fact it may not be. So yeah,
so before you get to whatever you're gonna say,
before I get to the rest, with hands, you know, waving around vaguely, the rest.
Does Apple have a rationale for this? Like, I mean, is this sloppiness or is this like Apple's decision was to prioritize this over this?
It's sloppiness. So now Apple says that they've had a fix in place since 2019, and they're kind of correct. Because the fix that they have in place partially addresses the issue, but it doesn't fully correct the problem. So, it's possible that when you turn on a VPN, that a lot of the stuff you're already doing now just kind of gets shifted over into that VPN tunnel and is now encrypted, but it's not a guarantee. So Apple still needs to do more to correct this problem. And I can give you a workaround for this, which is turn on the VPN on your device, go into airplane mode, come out of airplane mode, and now start doing all the stuff that you wanted to do. And so here's what happens. When you go into airplane mode, you're breaking the connections that you have with all the stuff on the internet. So those connections have to be reestablished when you come out of airplane mode. And so what should be happening in the background without you having to do that, when you turn on a VPN, the operating system should be allowing you to without you doing anything, It should just automatically break and reestablish all of those connections so that they're happening through the VPN and not bypassing it in some way.
Posit that mm-hmm. is completely ridiculous that we have to do that.
And your posit is absolutely reasonable. There's no reason why we should have to do that. I posit that as well. We shouldn't have to do a workaround to ensure that the safety, privacy, security systems that we are using on our devices are actually doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and who's going to remember to do that? I mean, I rephrased. It's very easy for me to see a lot of people not remembering to do that.
Right. Yeah, it's a real problem. And the part of the problem is that while Apple implemented a partial solution, and VPN app makers need to then go and fix and do a new setting in their code. Okay, well, that part's fine, but the new setting, why is the default for it to be off? And the setting, I mean, is something that a developer has to do, not you as an end user.
Right.
Why is that off by default? It should be on by default.
Should be on by default.
Yeah. But still, Apple has more work to do to fix this. And in the meantime, airplane mode as a toggle is a good friend. And I just came up with another workaround.
Okay.
To automate the workaround. Make a shortcut that when you run the shortcut, it turns on your VPN, toggles airplane mode on, and then back off again.
I like it.
But still, you shouldn't have to do that.
You should not have to do that. That's kind of ridiculous. All right. Well, that's the security half of our show. Let's get on to LinkedIn jobs. What do you say? What do you say? What do you say?
I posit that I want to hear about LinkedIn jobs.
Of course. You know why? It's because hiring is hard, right? The economy, the job market, like hiring is hard. And
people like us.
What about us?
I mean, it's got to be, well, either we're out in the job market and they're like, oh, it's them, or how do they get the jobs in front of people like us, you know, the good people?
So let me tell you about LinkedIn jobs. The hiring is hard. And my question to you is, if you need to hire, why not do everything you can to stack your chances of finding the right person? And that's where LinkedIn jobs can come in very, very handy. For one thing, LinkedIn is a huge professional network. It's 810 million people is the number they're claiming now. 810 million people around the world belong to LinkedIn jobs. And you can add your job in the purple hiring frame, hashtag hiring, to your LinkedIn profile. And that'll spread the word that you're hiring so that, you know, like people, like, I mean, the power of networking and connections is huge, especially like, you know, if it's, I'm sorry, I'm like going off on all these tangents. If you're looking to get a job and the job market is tough, you want your networking, you know, to help you find that job that matches you. If you're trying to hire someone and the job market is really tough for hirers, which is the case right now, you want to get like everybody looking out for their friends who would fit your job. And with the hiring frame and the hashtag that puts the hiring frame all around your LinkedIn profile, that can really help that process. You can get other people and their friends and their friends and their friends saying, hey, wait a minute, isn't my buddy Bobby Sue looking for a job? And, you know, hey, I should tell him about this. That can be really, really, really useful. Simple tools like screening questions, that makes it easy to focus on candidates that have just the right skills and experiences. that lets you prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. And then my number one thing is the dashboard. LinkedIn Jobs gives you a dashboard where you can manage your job postings and your potential candidates all from a very easy to use interface. Makes it a lot easier to do this stuff. And like I said, if you're trying to hire someone right now, doing everything you can to make that hiring process actually succeed seems like a good idea. And even better, you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM, just for listening to the show, and post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And we very much hope that you will check it out. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that LinkedIn Jobs is our sponsor. And I also want to point out that you have an incredible vocal range.
Do I? What do I do?
You do. See, it just comes natural to you. As you did the ad spot, it was like music, because there were points where your voice is lower and it had this timbre, and then it kind of rose up, and then you hit the part where you went even better. And
I wasn't even aware of it. So thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate that, which is funny because you're the podcast whore.
Right?
how to take a compliment and then be a dick about it. 101 by Brian Chaffin.
You know, when you listen to this show, it is just full of useful tidbits of information, just like that. You know, I hear my mom calling. I gotta go.
No, hold on. We got another half of the show to do.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, oh, great.
You're welcome. By the way, we are 32 minutes into our half hour show with only one more topic to go.
So what? You're saying it's a 90-minute show again?
No. I don't think we're going to go 90 minutes this time. But
by the way,
yeah,
I just want to share with you that we actually do get feedback from our listeners.
We do.
Thank you for that.
Yes,
we do. And some of the feedback that's come directly to me.
Yeah.
Is that you and I have good chemistry.
We do.
So, you know, apparently we do. So thank you for that feedback.
By the way, this month's check is in the mail. Go ahead.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, because, you know, if it wasn't, well, you know, mom's a calling.
Yes,
anyhow, right. People have also enjoyed when we share our thoughts on the different TV shows and movies that we've been enjoying. And apparently some people have been taking great joy, I suppose, Schadenfreude, in you being so much of a Star Trek nerd, and then me having to, well, actually you about Star Trek stuff.
Yeah, you have, I'm going to say, I don't want to have to put a mature warning on the show, but you have WTF pwned me. You have WTF pwned me recently when it comes to the Star Trek, and I called myself a nerd. You have schooled me.
Well, people seem to have really enjoyed that.
That's good. Can I pretend that I was just playing the straight man?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to believe it.
Yeah, but okay. How about if I add in, Brian, you know, it was so cool how you played the straight man, so I wouldn't feel insecure about my level of Star Trek knowledge. Hey, that was very sweet of you.
Check this out. I have a gaming buddy who knows at least as much as I do about the Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. And that's a crap ton.
Yeah. I mean, like, that doesn't happen, but he actually beat me, not beat me, but corrected me in an argument, and he was correct. That doesn't happen when it comes to Star Trek, to Lord of the Rings. Apparently it does happen with Star Trek. Yeah. Lord of the Rings.
That's impressive.
Only thing is, he's wrong. He made the argument that that Mary gets the credit for killing the Lord of the Nazgul, or at the very least dispersing him, rather than Eowyn, because he hit the Lord of the Nazgul with the Numenorean knife. And I'm like, dude, Eowyn gets the kill and Mary gets the assist. I mean, he was wrong about that one. I'm looking at you, Wanted. got the two fingers in the eyes thing going.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, even seeing it through the glass in the sound booth.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still impressive watching you do that.
It was impressive how much he stuck to his lame argument. But there was another thing, and I forget what it was because I lost that argument where he corrected me and was correct.
Well, of course, that's when you can't remember.
Of course. But at least I remember that it happened. Okay. The second half of the show is semi-ironically about streaming services.
Oh, I thought the second half of the show was going to be whether or not Gollum was redeemable. But okay, streaming services, whatever.
We could talk about that. Redeemable by... Anyway, go ahead. Streaming services.
Yeah. Okay, apparently we'll have our Gollum discussion another time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so streaming services. So, there's kind of been a little bit of a shake up, or at least a kerfuffle with the news. A right kerfuffle surrounding the news around streaming services recently. Netflix, they recently went up to $20 a month. And Disney, they just announced recently they're doing the same thing. And what is, I think it's HBO Max is in the same boat. Like all the streaming services are now clicking in to that $19.99 a month, $20 a month for their streaming services. And so of course some people are really annoyed because now they're going to have to pay more for their streaming services. Apple is still the exception because they're still at $5 a month. And Amazon, I suppose, is an exception as well because it's just part of the entire Prime package.
So which goes up every couple of years.
Which goes up every couple of years. What are we at now? It's, what, $120 a year for Prime?
I don't know. Let's...
Amazon... Whatever it is, Prime I'm price. Sure that... because of limited product availability where I live, I'm getting that back in shipping costs over the course of probably like 6 weeks.
Probably. $14.99 per month or $139 per year. Prime Video membership
$139 a year
is separate. If you're going to get just that, it's $8.99 per month, apparently.
Oh, I didn't realize you could get that separately. Okay, so Apple and Amazon are the low ball players in the pricing for and streaming services.
It still surprises me. Like, it's so weird to me that Apple TV Plus costs less than Apple Music.
Oh, you're right, it does.
I mean, that I fought tooth and nail every time someone would talk about Amazon TV, or excuse me, LOL, Apple TV Plus being $4.99 before it launched, I would just say that's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. Why would it possibly be less than Apple Music? That doesn't make any sense to me. When Apple is spending, we already know that Apple is spending billions on developing its own video content, and video content is exponentially more expensive than musical content to produce, although to be fair, there are exponentially more producers of music content than there are producers of professional video shows. Mm-hmm. So that might make that an apples and oranges comparison, but the reality is that when Apple TV Plus came out, it was $4.99 and it stayed $4.99. And for that first year, it was really hard to actually pay for it.
You're right. It was actually really difficult to give Apple money for Apple TV Plus in the beginning.
And if you did give them money, they'd turn around and say, no, you don't. We're going to just keep it for now.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, for those of us that got in free at the very beginning, and it was supposed to be 1 year, I think by the time they finally said, we'll take your money, it was like 2.5 years into their service.
Now, there are some mitigating factors there. The biggest one being that because Apple did not buy a studio or other kind of catalog, Apple didn't have a lot of like back catalog, archive content for people to consume, unlike essentially every other service out there. Mm-hmm. And because you have to start somewhere, there weren't even that many original new shows to watch at first. So I get that. I would argue that Apple has filled out its content significantly, but there's still probably not enough total content to make a price comparison against like Netflix or Disney, or even, and I really hate to say this, Amazon or Hulu, a good comparison.
Yeah, well, and yeah, that back catalog thing, I'm betting that is playing a significant role in Apple's pricing scheme, because when you look at Netflix, look at HBO Max, at least for now, there's all of this old back catalog content that's out there, TV shows from different networks and all these old movies. And yeah, you're right. Apple doesn't have that. It's all their new original content.
Yeah. So here's the question. Does Disney worth $20 a month? Is HBO worth $20 a month?
To me, that's subjective, because if you're watching a lot of the content on that network, then sure, maybe it is. If you're not, well, then maybe even at $15 a month, it wouldn't be worth it. And actually right now, I think the question about HBO Max, whether it's worth whatever you're paying, is suddenly very fluid, because, now there's the whole HBO Max Discovery Plus merger thing that's happening. Mm-hmm. And HBO Max is jettisoning a lot of content.
They are, weirdly so.
Yeah, I learned a little bit about that maybe a day or two ago.
Okay.
And it looks like what they're doing is jettisoning content that has lower traffic, and also stuff where they can save a lot of money on not having to pay residual fees and royalties. So that means a lot of content that they contracted and maybe stopped producing, but it's still there, so they're having to pay residuals, and children's content. So they're just dumping all that stuff, which
I see.
It kind of sucks. What rubs me the wrong way about that is watching what's happening with Sesame Street. I mean, this program that was created to help kids in situations where maybe it's lower income families, less opportunities to learn, and so here's this show for them, and it should just be accessible, and then it ends up behind a paywall, and now its future is kind of up in the air, because Sesame Street content, at least a portion of it, is being pulled from HBO Max, and now we don't know what's going to happen with it.
I'd love to see Apple buy that.
I could see if Apple were able to snag the Sesame Street content. I could see them putting it out on Apple TV Plus as something you can watch without a subscription, just because.
Yeah,
it would be the right thing to do.
It would be the right thing to do for sure. I don't know that they would do that, but it would be a great thing to do. I don't even know exactly how that would work. Is there other content you can watch on Apple TV Plus without a subscription?
Yeah, they do it for promotional stuff. Like, oh, that's a fair point. Right now, you can watch season one of C without a subscription.
Yeah, and you can often watch first episodes of series.
Uh-huh.
So, uh-huh. Yeah, all right. I'm just going to go ahead. No one's going to know that I asked that. You know, it's great that Apple is like perfectly in place to be able to offer free content if they should. I mean, they do it after all already, right?
Right.
What, like, yeah, the first,
that's a really good observation, Brian. Thank you for bringing that up.
I think the first season of C, is that, I think that's available.
Right. Right. I had forgotten about that.
So unless HBO refuses to sell it, which would be really make them the bad guys. By the way, who's the parent company going to be? Is it Discovery Plus or HBO?
It's Discovery Plus.
Right. So unless Discovery Plus refused to sell it, I would think that Sesame Street will find a buyer. It'll find a home.
I hope so.
But that's still, I mean, that still leaves the criticism in place that, like, you know, HBO took it behind a paywall, and now it, because of that, it may be being pooped on somewhere. And that's not cool.
That's very not cool.
Very not cool. All right. So Disney Plus. Is Disney Plus worth $20? Did we already talk about that? I wasn't listening.
No, we did not talk about Disney Plus. And I mean, for me, it's easier to justify, just generally speaking, $20 a month for Disney Plus, because there is so much content there that covers the spectrum of, you know, like a whole family. If you have young kids, there's lots of content there. They have great stuff for tweens. There's the whole Star Wars property. There's the Marvel property. There's the Pixar properties. I mean, there's a lot of big name things that are there, and a lot of new original shows that are coming out.
New movies and new TV shows, in addition to an extensive back catalog of much beloved properties.
Yeah. I mean, look at Star Wars, Mandalorian. And we just wrapped up Kenobi. New season of Mandalorian is coming. Ahsoka is coming. Andor, that series launches end of August or something like that. And then look at the original Marvel content that's coming out.
Is that a the freaking Ewok show?
No, you're thinking Endor.
I am thinking Endor. Thank you.
And Endor, yes, if you really want to watch the animated Ewok.
No. I hate the Ewoks. I hate the Ewoks. I hate the Ewoks. I hate the Ewok
holiday specials. You can watch that too.
No.
No, Andor, this is Cassian Andor. This is one of the rebel spies from Rogue One.
Ah.
And, yeah. By the way, if you haven't watched Miss Marvel, watch Miss Marvel.
I still haven't watched it. I still intend to. I have not done it yet.
Oh, it's wonderful. First episode of She-Hulk. I didn't know what to expect, you know, especially because people were bagging on it so much before it came out.
The incels were bagging on it. Let's be honest.
Yeah, the incels were bagging on it so much. So which probably should have told me everything I need to know. Yeah. Anyhow, I thoroughly enjoyed that first episode, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the series.
Cool. I will watch that one too. That wasn't even on my radar, to be honest, but
Put it on your radar. Yeah. It's done with a lot of humor.
Cool.
It's yeah. They break the fourth wall in a really good way. Anyhow, I'm sorry. What were we talking about?
I think that we both agree that Disney Plus is worth $20. I mean, this discussion is super subjective, right? It may not be worth $20 to you because you can't afford it, or you don't want to spend $20 in that manner, and that's entirely reasonable. Or maybe you don't care about
the content.
Yeah, you don't like the content, or whatever. Or maybe it just offends you. The idea of spending $20, you know, like we're right back at cable. Because now I have to have 5 subscription services to watch everything. And you're totally right. But on an individual basis, I think to Jeff and I, Disney Plus is worth it. HBO is probably worth it to me. But that's, yeah, I think, even more subjective. HBO's become
conditionally worth it. Yeah. I mean, they just laid off 14% of their original content staff.
Yeah.
So... yeah. But yeah, Disney, Paramount Plus is, I think, worth it, at least right now.
Yeah,
they've done a really good job of hooking me in with a new Star Trek property coming out just often enough that canceling my subscription and waiting for the next one isn't reasonable.
But there's also other good content on there. Stephen Colbert's show is on there.
Right.
I think they've done a good job of not only funneling their extensive broadcast and cable network properties onto Paramount Plus, but also even developing some shows for Paramount Plus, including the Star Trek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But is that $20 a month yet? Paramount Plus pricing.
I think it's $20 a month. I think they're all like sitting at $20 a month now. I
don't think is, although it's always concerning when the landing page says try it for free.
Yeah, but they all say that.
Without like actually giving me the actual price. That's super annoying. $14.99 a month. The regular Showtime bundle rate is $11.99 a month or $120 a year. Premium plan plus Showtime. Okay, so you can get premium. Okay, I'm trying to sausage.
But here's the problem. It's confusing. What are you getting and how much does it cost?
All right. So the essential stream with limited commercial interruptions for $5 a month. Salt in the wounds. $10 a month commercial free. So you watch with no ads for just $10 a month. You can do an annual thing for $100 a year. So saves 2 months worth. That's good. Please not mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. And then you can do essential plan plus Showtime for $12 a month. So that would be the limited ads. Or you can do premium, which is no ads, plus Showtime for $15 a month. And both of those also have the year-long option that, again, gives you essentially 2 months free.
Okay. So, all right. Well, then Paramount Plus is much more reasonably priced, and
especially if you're going to $10 with Showtime.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I have Showtime, and I have no idea if it's part of that bundle or something else. Because you know, Apple TV Plus has done different package deals along the way, and then you get grandfathered into something.
Yeah.
So I've got Showtime and I have no idea where it came from.
It probably came from the subscribe to Paramount plus Showtime deals that through Apple TV, which means, by the way, that you don't use the Paramount Plus app. You actually use the Apple TV app to find your shows.
Right. Yes.
And that is super confusing, especially like For whatever reason, I had a... Ichabod's very upset about that.
Yeah, I can appreciate his concern about pricing.
Yeah, because it takes away from kibble, possibly. Thank you, buddy.
Right. And that would be just the worst.
That.
Yeah.
Just the worst. Okay, I think he's done. I'm sorry about that, folks. So, yeah, I had to, like, I probably caught an ad for an Apple TV Plus ads, like, hey, you can go watch this on Paramount Plus for a Star Trek show. And so, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch that. And then I forgot that's how I got to it. And so I'm just, like, looking at the Paramount app, and I'm trying to, like, restore my subscription. And then I ended up calling Apple saying, what's the deal? I've got the subscription right here, but I can't subscribe to the, and she told me, oh no, you need to do that through the Apple TV app. And I'm like, no, I don't.
And she's like,
she was very polite. She was very polite. Yes, she did, yes, not she call me the idiot that I was being. And anyway, so that's confusing. And to me is like, they need to do that better, because
you know, how many, that's actually a really good point. Yeah.
It's completely unintuitive.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that we have to remember which app we go to watch which content, and which content that we need to go specifically to the Apple TV app to find, and then it's going to play through that app. Or maybe we still need to have the app for the other service installed, and then it just jumps over to that service. It's confusing, and the fact that we can't get all of these streaming services to cooperate so that we can do something like use the Apple TV app and have a unified interface, just find everything there and don't worry about where it came from. Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, that would be good. All right, so where are we? We're at Paramount Plus, probably worth the price that they're charging because it's less. Mm-hmm. It's like $10 a month to get stuff ad free, and that's without doing. I would, by the way, $5 a month to not get ads. Yes, please.
Oh yeah, yeah. If I'm paying for a streaming service and I have to watch ads, I'm gonna start flipping tables.
Ooh. So how about Netflix? Would you go free Netflix and get ads?
Nope.
Same. I don't want that. Give it. Let me pay for it, and I'll pay for it without ads.
There you go. Yep. I have no interest in watching ads.
I have no interest in watching ads, and I'm happy to pay for that option.
Yes. There we go. That's the other part of it. I am happy to pay for it as well.
Yeah. All right.
I don't expect my content to be free because it doesn't get made for free.
It doesn't get made for free. People get to make money, and they get to get salaries and paychecks and things. The people who are risking all their money get to have the opportunity to profit. But I would much rather pay for an ad free. I mean, I guess there's a limit. I don't want to pay $100 a month for Netflix.
No.
I would probably actually stop. If it was like free or $100 a month, I'm going to go not.
Yeah, delete. If it was free or $100 a month, hey, I don't need to see Umbrella Academy that bad.
No, this despite how amazing Umbrella Academy is. And by the way, can we take a second to complained to Netflix about not allowing Apple TV to show what's next? Like, Netflix will not give Apple TV the data of the shows that we were watching, what's up next, things like that. And it's infuriating.
Yes, it's infuriating even more so because that you can use the Apple TV app to find some of the library content, but none of Netflix's original content. And yeah, and up next doesn't work for anything. Mm-mm. Seriously, people?
And it's I don't actually know, but what I suspect is that Netflix doesn't want to give Apple the data of what we're watching since Apple is a competitor.
Netflix has made it clear they don't want to share information with anyone.
Right. And to which I say that annoys the crap out of me, but apparently not enough to make me stop paying.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe they're making a fine calculus, at least when it comes to me. So Apple TV Plus, certainly worth $5 a month.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
And Hulu. Hulu's the one I go. I don't cancel it, but it's one of the ones I watch the least.
I actually don't have a Hulu subscription. So the occasional show that I want to watch, I go and watch it at a friend's house.
That's good. So the lesson there being maintain your friendships.
Yeah. So I have not seen Handmaid's Tale, and I hear I really need to watch it, but,
it's a good show. And I haven't, I do subscribe, and I haven't watched I think I watched the first season only. Just haven't gotten back to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can appreciate why, because you've been so wrapped up in the Orville. Man, do I know how to push your buttons or what?
Listen.
Hold on, I got to get my popcorn.
Don't complain. If you're wanting to be a storyteller, don't dump on storytellers. If you want to be a storyteller, don't dump on. Okay. There are a lot of aspects of Orville that I really like. Special effects are actually great. They're amazing. This new season is the fourth season, right?
Third season.
Third season of Orville has amazing effects.
Yeah, it does. Each episode is basically a movie.
Okay, all I'm saying is that if the president of a multi-planet union, not a federation, of course, a multi-planet union of allied peoples is going to visit a potential key ally, that they're probably going to take more than an assistant.
But what if that union president is Bruce Boxleitner? He could go alone and be totally fine, right? So you just send a couple extra people along as a courtesy.
Listen, if you can't tell the story that you want to tell due to budget constraints or, you know, like the number of extras you can hire, tell a different story. That's all I'm saying. Can you imagine the president of Ecuador, a very small, lovely country that doesn't have a military? Can you imagine the president of Ecuador traveling to another country, let alone, you know, like whatever, and taking an assistant? That's their whole team.
It's like Norway.
No guards.
Where the president rides a bike down the street alone to go to their office.
Guarantee you that when the prime minister of Norway is traveling to another country, they're not riding their bicycle alone. They got a staff. They've got protocol experts.
Well, someone's got to carry all this stuff.
They've got intelligence people. I mean, you know, it's just like...
Brian, I have to say, you have no idea the level of self-control I am exerting to not just drop little button push things on you right now, just one after another.
It's because you've spent hours listening to me rant and rave.
Right. So I know exactly the things that I could say. How do you feel about songs?
How do you feel about songs?
I appreciate the talent, but at the same time, if the song placement feels like it is gratuitous to merely highlight an actor's talent and doesn't add to the story itself, then it becomes tedious, and I don't enjoy that.
All right, so question. Contrived. It's like there's this concept of fan servicing, and I feel like Orville has engaged in some actor servicing. Mm-hmm. Right? But here's the thing. How about Spock playing in the mess hall in TOS? We love that.
Okay.
didn't advance the story.
No, that was straight up a crap episode of Trek across the board.
That was a fantastic episode of Trek.
Oh my God.
It was a fantastic episode of Trek, man.
We're heading to Eden,
yes,
man.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It was in my tidy shorts.
It was the zeitgeist of the time.
It was the zeitgeist of the time, but I think even then it was considered pretty much a crap episode.
I love that episode. I also love that song. I think that is a good song.
You know, one of the things that I really like about that episode.
Do tell. Nothing.
there's a couple things. First is that see, it's going to be a 90-minute episode anyhow, and you're like, oh, I don't think we have enough content. First, Nichelle Nichols has an incredible singing voice. So just getting to hear her sing,
rest
while
in peace.
That was pandering to her talents, it was actually really great to hear Nichelle Nichols sing. But the other part is we got to see the shuttlecraft in the original series so rarely because it was expensive to use. I was excited that it was a shuttlecraft episode.
Fair. Fair. Turned out, by the way, Eden wasn't all that, nor a bag of chips.
No, it was not.
Or it was neither all that. All right. I think that we have taken this to the most absurd extremes that we can. Jeff, what do you think?
Oh, we have not, but I think we've taken it far enough for today. We could go far more absurd if we chose.
We could. We could. That is this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us over at contextmachine.io. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass was recorded by Boom just for us. LinkedIn Jobs was our sponsor. You can post your job for free. Didn't mean to interrupt you, but you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM.
That's all right. All I was going to do was set you up to say what you just said. And clearly you didn't need the setup.
Bulldoze
ahead. Top men.
Top men, right. And I'm at Twitter at GeekTales. Instagram, same thing. And you're on what's your Twitter handle again?
I know mine's really obscure.
Yeah.
It's Jay Gamut.
Oh yeah. So it is Jay Gamut. And I think that, we can probably find you in all the social media places the same way. Jay Gamut.
Yeah. Actually the only exception is LinkedIn. Hmm. And that's because it wouldn't let me do Jay Gamut. So it had to be Jeff Gamut.
That makes sense.
It was weird.
That actually makes sense. All right. Let's see. I think that's everything, Jeff. Top men.
Hey, how about the Marvel songs?